Okay, so your department has released some new data that show the graduation gap between white and minority students is starting to close, but there remains a 16 percentage point difference between the graduation rate of white and African-American students nationwide. In Missouri, that number is 19 percentage points. So my question is, what's behind that gap starting to close, and what more needs to be done to address the disparity?
Well, first of all, I was just thrilled to be able to see the progress that the nation is making at every level. So first of all, high school graduation rates that you said are at all-time highs for the nation, up to, above 81% now, which is fantastic. Dropout rates are down. Every subgroup of students is improving, whether it's white children, black children, Hispanic students, Native American, Asian American, low-income students, students who are learning English, students with disabilities. So it's like the perfect story where you have the nation as a whole at all-time highs and gaps closing. Missouri was actually one of the top five or six states in terms of improvement from 2011 to 2013, with about a 4.7% increase in graduation rates. So that is fantastic news for the nation, for the state. I called the governor, Governor Nixon, haven't spoken to him yet, but just want to offer my congratulations to him and to the state for raising the bar and closing the gap. But as you said, we have a long way to go. And so this is not mission accomplished. It is very encouraging, significant progress in the right direction. But we have to continue to get better faster. How do we do that? Where we have schools with historically unacceptably high dropout rates, we have to challenge the status quo there. These schools that have been dropout factories sometimes for decades. And whether it's, you know, more time for students or more support or more counselors, we've tried to put significant resources there. We have to continue to talk to parents in the community about the huge and devastating cost of dropping out. If you drop out of high school today, you're basically condemned to poverty and social failure. There are no good jobs out there. And then ultimately, the goal obviously can't be simply to graduate from high school. It's got to be to go on to some form of higher education, be that four-year universities, two-year community colleges, trade, technical, vocational training. And we have to really help everyone understand that the graduation from high school is an important stepping stone in your educational career, but it cannot be an ending point.
I just want to play devil's advocate for a moment. You brought up the point about the rising overall graduation rate, both in the nation and certainly in Missouri as well. But we've also seen over the last few years a rise in the number of college and university students who need, say, remedial classes once they get on campus. And there's some folks who would look at those numbers and say, you can't really assume that all of those students are really ready for college or career after they graduate from high school.
That's not devil's advocate, but you're exactly accurate. That's exactly, precisely correct. And the goal can't be simply high school graduation. It's got to be to make sure students are truly college and career ready. And that's why having high standards, high expectations in every state and across every high school is hugely important. And it's devastating across the country the number of young people who need remedial classes, as you said, once they go to college. And you burn through financial aid, you burn through Pell Grants, taking non-credit-bearing classes. They have higher dropout rates from college, longer time to completion. It's not fair to them, and it's not fair to you and I as taxpayers. And so making sure that we have the highest of standards, highest of expectations, is one of the most important things that we see going on around the nation. Now, some would argue that when you raise expectations, that might somehow increase the dropout rate, and I just fundamentally disagree. I think the vast majority of young people drop out of high school not because it's too hard, but because it's too easy. They're bored, and they also don't see the connection between what they're learning and the real world. So raising the bar, more access to AP classes and college-level classes and dual enrollment, more connections and engagement to what you're learning in the classroom, to the real world, and to real jobs. If we do those things, I'm convinced graduation rates will continue to go up, dropout rates will go down, and to your very important point, more of our high school graduates will be honestly college and career ready.
And you know, in many ways, we're talking this morning about equity in education, and recently there was a report out of UCLA that, based on data from the 2011-12 school year, it found that schools in Missouri suspended African-American students at a higher rate than any other state in the country. So my question is, what needs to happen at either the federal, state, or local level to ensure that African-American students are being treated fairly when it comes to school discipline?
So the Attorney General, Eric Holder, who's a good friend, and I put out very, very clear guidance a while back. And some people don't like when I talk about the school-to-prison pipeline. But in some places, that is very real. And I was stunned, absolutely stunned, to learn that in too many places around the country, we were suspending children from preschool, 3- and 4-year-olds. It was just mind-boggling to me. And we know that very sadly, disproportionately, that was young boys of color. And so to think about a prison, the school to prison pipeline starting in pre-kindergarten is just obviously totally unacceptable, totally untenable. And so figuring out when children are struggling, and many children do struggle, what's the root cause of that issue? Can we work with counselors? Can we work with social workers? Can we work with the students themselves? Can we bring in their parents? Can we think about restorative justice and peer juries and not suspend and expel students and put them out to the streets? And whatever the issue is, kicking kids out of school, removing them from stability and support, again, just doesn't make sense to me. And there are many places that have made significant progress, and this is a place where Missouri has to have some honest conversations around discipline policies, around race, and move in a different direction. We have seen other states and school system, the LA school system being one major, major system that took this issue on with real honesty and urgency, and they've seen some pretty dramatic declines in those suspensions and expulsion rates. So there are lots of examples out there, but you can't get there by putting your head in the sand. You have to have those conversations.
Yeah, and I want to ask you about your trip to Ferguson this past December. I talked with you after you got done meeting with students in Ferguson and other parts of the St. Louis area. You seemed visibly moved by what you heard and said that you needed some time to think about it and digest what you heard before really saying what more could be done at the federal level to address some of the inequities that you heard from students that day. So a few months have passed. Have you reached any conclusions?
Yeah, it was very moving. It's actually just a coincidence. There are actually a number of students from the Ferguson area who were visiting with us today here in Washington. So I'm going to be spending time with them this afternoon. So we've had staff go down subsequent to my visit. So this has been very much an ongoing dialogue. But at the end of the day, I walked away with just a tremendous sense of the capacity of these students to do extraordinarily well academically. They were serious. They were committed. They knew they had to build positive futures for themselves by working really hard in class. But in too many places, they were frankly scared, and they didn't feel supported. They didn't feel that the real needs were being addressed or the tough issues were being put on the table. And so we want to continue to empower them as both students and as not future leaders, but as current leaders now. We want to continue to listen to them. We want to continue to give them resources. The goal of the visit today is many students want to use their spring break to learn more about the civil rights movement and not as just a time in our history, going back a couple of decades, but obviously the very real relevance to today. And so a number of our staff are going to be working with them and sort of talking them through some of that history and what it means to what they're trying to accomplish today. So we very much want to continue to be engaged and work directly with students to empower them, to help them grow academically, and I think very importantly for us to continue to listen and learn what we can do to be more helpful and supportive.
Yeah, I know we're running short on time, but a couple more quick questions. Missouri has sorely underfunded the foundation formula, which is basically the mechanism the state uses to close the funding gap between rich and poor schools. So can there be a serious conversation about school equity, many of the things you're talking about with students today in D.C., in this country, in this region, when the landscape for school funding is so uneven?
And we've also put out data recently, which hopefully you've seen last week, talking about in many states the inequities between poorer or high poverty school districts in terms of the resources they receive and wealthier school districts where they get far too often more resources. So the children who need the most get the least, and the children who need the least get the most. And we have to continue to challenge that. We cannot ever back off of not just a commitment to equity, but to high expectations for every single child. Regardless of where children come from, they're competing in a globally competitive economy today, and we need to have them prepared and ready. But we need folks, again, across the political spectrum, Republican, Democrat, I could care less, they have to see education as an investment and the best investment we can make. And whether it's an early childhood education, whether it's in K to 12, and again, making sure students are graduating college and career ready, making sure that every single young person has access to post-secondary education. It's interesting. So the president has talked a lot about, you know, making community colleges much more accessible and affordable. That wasn't an idea that came from the president or I. That came from Governor Haslam, who's a conservative Republican governor in Tennessee, who has made community college free for every single child, every single student across Tennessee. We looked at states that were doing a better job of funding poorer districts and actually getting more resources to the kids and communities who need the most. One was Minnesota, which is generally more of a Democratic, liberal state. The other is Indiana, which is very much a more conservative state. So two very different, political dynamics, but they got to the same conclusion. And for me, not coincidentally at all, those are states where we're seeing some real improvements in student achievement. And so we need to throw politics and ideology out, work together. If we want strong families, if we want a strong economy, if we want to keep good jobs in our communities and in our states and ultimately in our nation, we have to give every child access to a world-class education.
And quickly, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the Federal Elementary and Secondary Education Act. Most people know it as No Child Left Behind. Obviously, up for reauthorization by Congress. You're on record as not being a big fan of the law as it stands, but you don't want to throw out its core requirement of annual testing. You want to make some changes to it. Explain what those changes would be.
Well, first of all, this law came out of 1965, 50 years ago. This is not just an education law, it's a civil rights law. And again, folks have to work together to help drive educational improvement and build upon the success we're seeing in higher graduation rates and lower dropout rates and more students of color, not just graduating, but going on to college, which has been fantastic to see. So there are three core values that we think are so important to this law. One, as you talked about clearly, is a focus on equity, and we want to make sure more children have access to early childhood education. It's the best investment we can make. We want to increase resources for Title I, which is for poor children. Secondly, we always couple equity with excellence. We have to make sure that we have high standards, college and career-ready standards for every child, regardless of where they live. We need to make sure we are assessing progress annually, and when we're doing too much testing, we should cut back on it. But we need to know who's improving and who's not and why. And then finally, we should have a real focus on innovation. And for all the challenges we see in education, somewhere, someplace, people are solving them in remarkably creative ways. And we've done a lot to shine a spotlight on best practices, to put more resources behind them, to help them spread. And so those three things, equity, excellence, and innovation, need to be at the core of any attempt to fix a law that is outdated and desperately in need of folks working together in Congress to fix it and help move the nation forward.
But there's folks who would obviously say that part of what happens under No Child Left Behind as it stands is it creates this culture of high-stakes testing. How would you respond to that?
We agree. And again, what we've done through the waiver process, we've provided waivers to help the vast majority of states move away from the most onerous parts of No Child Left Behind, is have a much more thoughtful and nuanced view of accountability. So looking less at an absolute test score and more at growth and gain, how much are students improving, but moving way beyond just test scores. And so we have more and more states looking at graduation rates, looking at reductions in dropout rates, looking at what percent of their high school graduates are actually college and career ready, not having to take remedial classes. What percent are going on to college? What percent are persevering in college? And so sometimes you get critiqued that this is more complicated, but it's absolutely the right thing to do. If you have a great third grade test score, but your school, your state has a 50% dropout rate, it's hard to get a good job with that test score from third grade. And so there are many states doing some very, very creative and innovative things to absolutely hold themselves, I would argue, to a higher level of accountability, but with less focus on a single test score.